On the evening of May 28th, 1997, there was an address, there was a convocation. It was a gathering at the New York Grand Hyatt. Those of us who have been to New York may have been to the city, may have even been to this hotel. It's a significant, iconic hotel. It has 1,298 rooms. It's a huge hotel. It's a huge ballroom. It's maybe hashgacha that we're having this discussion today because apparently it's been closed since the beginning of COVID and it's reopening tomorrow. Okay. You'll see why else we're talking about this discussion today. 800 people gathered at the Grand Hyatt in 1997 to celebrate the centennial, the 100th anniversary of Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, what's known as the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. Ah, Ira, second Hashgacha Pratis. This was on the schedule like 2 months ago. I didn't even know about the Chag HaSmicha, but today there is a group of Musmachim. Several of them are our Kolol alumni who are celebrating their Chag HaSmicha today in Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan and Lamport Auditorium, which is
Rabbi Sprung is one of them.
I think he was the previous. I have to check. Anyway, so they gathered to celebrate the centennial of Reitz. Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was originally founded by a group of lay leaders in New York City in 1896. Because at that time, the situation in terms of Jewish education, certainly of higher Torah education, of serious yeshiva learning, it was very, very bleak in New York. There were only two small yeshivas, and they were barely sustainable. Originally, the yeshiva was called Eitz Chaim. It was called Eitz Chaim because it was named after the Volozhin yeshiva, which was called Eitz Chaim. It was then renamed later what is known as today as Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, who passed away later that year, was the most senior posik. I don't think you can dispute that. He was the posik achron of Europe at that time. When he passed away, you could say that the mantle passed to the Chafetz Chaim in terms of being the most senior rabbinic authority. And then the Chafetz Chaim dies in 1933, and then the accepted the Gadol Hador was Reb Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. But before Reb Chaim Ozer and before the Chafetz Chaim, you could argue that Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, in terms of psak, in terms of Hora, was the most senior rabbinic figure in the world. He authored many tshuvas, several tshuvas called Ein Yitzchak, which really means the eyes of Yitzchak. His name is Yitzchak Elchanan. As also Be'er Yitzchak, the well of Yitzchak. Yitzchak dug wells. He wrote on a lot of issues that came up around the world. He was sent shilas from everywhere, even from the United States. Very complicated shilas. So when Rav Yitzchak Elchanan passed away, the yeshiva was later renamed in his honor. So in 1997, Reitz celebrated its centennial. And at this gathering, the president of Yeshiva University, who was also the Rosh Yeshiva, or the Rosh HaYeshiva of Yeshiva Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and this is going to be for a different week, how they were not exactly the same at that time. Initially, it was just the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, then it became Yeshiva College, and Yeshiva College and Reitz were together. And then in the 1970s, they legally separated for a whole host of reasons that we're not going to talk about today. But Rabbi Dr. Norman Land, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was both the president of YU and the Rosh Yeshiva, the president of Reitz. This function, he was speaking as the president of Reitz, as the Rosh Yeshiva of Reitz, and he was gathered together with all of these supporters and alumni and rabbeim to celebrate the centennial of Reitz. The talk that he gave that night became a major, enormous, lasting source of controversy. And the controversy surrounds one Gemara, one story. A story that you might be familiar with, which if you turn the page, page one is the commentator article on this dinner. Page two is a story in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. The story of the great, the saintly, the Eliger Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was involved in a conversation, which is the previous section of Gemara. It's not pertinent for us today. He was involved in a conversation that was leaked to the Roman authorities. And at that time, what he had said was not particularly flattering or appreciated by the Roman authorities, so he went into hiding. And the end of the story is what appears in this Gemara. Uzlu, he went together with his son, Rabbi Elazar. Tashu b'ma'arta. They hid in a ma'ara, in a cave. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, Rabbi Elazar, are hiding in a cave. Israchish Nisa, top line, a miracle occurred. Ivri Luhu, it was created them for them. Charuva, Charuv, a buxer tree, carob. Ve'ena demaya, and a, literally, a spring of water, an ein hamayim. And the Gemara describes that they used to remove their clothing so that it shouldn't get worn down, and they would submerge themselves into the sand of the cave. That's how they learned. They were submerged in the sand of the cave. And when it came time for davening, they would come out, get dressed, and daven, and then they would go back into the sand so that their clothing wouldn't wear out. And the Gemara tells us, how long were they there? Look at the fourth line, first word. Isvu treisar shani b'ma'arta. They sat for treisar. Treisar, which is how many?
12.
12 years in the cave. 12 years. Asa Elio. Elio Anavi comes. Vekom apischa dema'arta. And he stood at the entrance of the cave. Omar, he said, Man ludi labar Yochai. Who will tell Rabbar Yochai, the son of Yochai, the Heilige Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, demis Kesar, that the Caesar has died, ubotil gezerte, and his decree is nullified. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, someone's got to come and tell him that no one's looking for him. He's not a fugitive anymore. He's not a wanted man. He should come out of the cave. Nafku, they came out. So what happens after the Tana Eloki, the great spiritual giant of all time, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, comes out of the cave? Chazu Inshi, they saw men. Deka Karvi Vizari. They were plowing and planting. Amar said, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Menichin Chai Olam. They are abandoning, they are leaving eternal life. Va'oskim b'chai Yisha. And they were engaged, they're engaged in temporal life. They're wasting their time. They're plowing and planting instead of learning Torah. Learning Torah, that's nitzchius, that's eternity. And this, it's just temporal. Says the Gemara, look what happens. Kol makom, every place, shenosnin einayim, that they gaze, that they put their eyes, miyad nisraf. It was instantly incinerated, instantly burnt, miyad nisraf. So what happens? Yatzasa baskol va'amra. A heavenly voice came out and said, Amra lahem lahachriv olami yatzasem. You left the cave to destroy my world? Chizru lamaraschem. Go back to your cave. Hadar azol isvu treisar yarchishasa. So they went back back into the cave for 12 years. 12 months. 12 months of a year. Amri, they said, listen to what they said. Fascinating. Mishpat Rishoyim Begehenim Yud Beis Chodesh. The process of a neshama, of a soul that undergoes purification in Gehenim, Lo Aleinu, is 12 months, which is parenthetically why people recite Kaddish only for 11 months, because we assume that all of our relatives, V'amech Kulam Tzadikim, nobody's in Gehenim Rachman Litzlan for 12 months. That's only for Rishoyim, but we assume that all the Tzadikim, Amech Kulam Tzadikim. So they figured, well, it takes 12 months for the transformational process of Gehenim to be effective. So we're going to go back 12 months in the cave. Now what happens? Yatzaso baskol v'amra. Then at the end of 12 months, a heavenly voice comes out. The first time, who told them to come out? Who hinted to them to come out? Elio, right? The first time it was Elio, and they came out on their own. This time, who's telling them to come back? The Ribbono Shalom is telling them, it's time to come out of the cave. Tzu'u mimaraschem, go out of your cave. Nafku, they came out. What happened? Kol hecha dahavamachi Rabbi Elazar, fourth line from the bottom, havamasi Rabbi Shimon. They come out of the cave. Two men, Rabbi Elazar, when he saw people, they were going to work. He saw them, and what did he do? He burnt it up with his eyes. And whatever he burnt, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon healed. So they weren't on the same page. When they came out of the cave the first time, they were on the same page. They were incinerating everything. When they come out the second time, the son, Rabbi Elazar, is burning everything, and the father, the Halakha Rabbi Shimon, is healing it. That's where they're up to. Omar Lo, fourth line from the bottom. So Reb Shimon said to him, Bini, you should know, Dai la'olam ani va'ata. You should know that the truth is, if it was just me and you in this world, that would be sufficient, because we're on that spiritual level. But look what happens now. Bahadi panya demale shabsa. It was in that turning of Friday afternoon. So it was late Erev Shabbos. So we know what that looks like. Friday afternoon, a few minutes before Shabbos. Chazu they saw, Hahu, and we're going to come back to this carefully later, Hahu Saba. What does it mean when the Gemara says Hahu Saba? That Saba. What is a Saba? So in today we call it a Saba as a grandfather. But in the Gemara, it doesn't necessarily have to do with children or grandchildren. Saba just means... That's right, an older person. Hahu Saba, an old man. Dahava Nokit Tre Misani Asa. What is Asa? Asa means, it's Aramaic for Hadas. So it was Friday afternoon right before Shabbos. There was an old man who was holding Tre Medone Asa, two Hadas branches, and we're going to get to each one of these elements of the story later. Tre Medone Asa, two branches of Hadas, Virohit, and he was running Bein Hashmashos in twilight, just beginning of Shabbos. He's holding two myrtle branches, Hadasim. So here's this old man running. You know, some of you remember this. You know, it's like Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, like Mamash right before Shabbos. This one guy, the streets are totally empty. This one guy is running. You know, that guy. So he's running with flowers. You see, he's running two Hadasim. And who's in the street? The Halak of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and Reb Elazar of Reb Shimon. So they say to the guy, Amrulay, third to last line, Hani Lomalach, why do you have, what are you running with two Hadasim for? Omar Lui said to them, L'chvod Shabbos. It's for the honor of Shabbos. The old man says, L'chvod Shabbos. So they say to him, V'tiski Lach Bechada. Shouldn't it be sufficient? L'kavod Shabbos, take one hadas. Why do you need two? So he says, Chad keneged zachar, one correlated to zachar, v'chad keneged shamar. Exactly. Omar Le Lebreis, Reb Shim Bar Yochai, says to his son, Chazi, look at these Jews. Look at them. Kama chavivin mitzvah al Yisrael. How beloved are mitzvahs to the Jewish people. And the Gemara concludes, Yosef datayu. His mind was set at ease. And now whenever he saw people doing whatever they were doing, Rebbe Elazar no longer incinerated the work. That's the story in the Gemara. That's the story. So Rabbi Lam, Zichron Levracha, picks up this story and expounds on it. And he actually publishes the drasha that he gave in the second volume of a collection of drashos called 70 Faces. This is in volume 2. What do we learn from this? Asks Rabbi Lam. And this is what he told the group of hundreds of people in the Hyatt. We learn that caves are important, that they are critical if we are to create Talmidei Chachamim and nourish people of great spiritual capacity. But it is not the norm for Jewish society and community, or for that matter, for Talmidei Chachamim. Any attempt to impose the discipline of the cave on the, quote, real world, end quote, is destructive, and those who advocate it are told, go back to your cave. The divine voice favors the newfound maturity of Reb Shimon bar Yochai, not the radical view of his son. Hence the command is clear, leave the cave. The regular Jewish community that remains loyal to Yiddishkeit is a precious one and should be valued, even as in an old and apparently uneducated man who does what he can with love. See how the people of Israel love the mitzvos. Go to the next page. Skip this end. We who study and teach at yeshiva essentially live in a private community, in a marvelous enclave, one of study and thought and research, of vibrant ideas and creative concepts and novel interpretations and spiritual growth, all on the very highest levels. But it is an enclave, not a cave. We are not hermetically sealed off from the world. Yes, the cave experience can be and indeed is a vital element in one's Torah development. And that is why we recommend a year of intensive immersion in Torah in Israel and for Smicha students at our Grus Institute in Jerusalem. This is the published edition of the talk. Apparently, when he gave this, when he delivered this in the hotel, he added, at great expense to us. Because I could tell you, as a Muslim chavritz, I attended the yeshiva for years for free. And that was because of this man, Dr. Norman Lam, who raised enormous amounts of money so that young men like me, boys like us, regular boys, could attend the yeshiva for free. Then when I was married, I learned in the Grus Kollel, we got an apartment for free. It was paid for by yeshiva. I had this experience. When he passed away, Rav Shechter, my Rebbe, Rav Shechter was masbid Dr. Lam, and he pointed out that all the Talmud Torah, all the everything, all the Rosh Yeshiva, all the amazing shum and all that, it was a credit to him because he went out there and raised enormous, enormous sums of money that he poured into the yeshiva and into the boys, into me, into the rabbeim. So when he gave this talk, he was talking to donors. And he says, look, your donations are going to, we put money into this. This is something we value. That's just an interesting parenthetical side. Let's keep going. It's not in the printed version that he put in the book. But the cave is not the natural habitat of Torah. A house of study, a base medrash, is where Torah flourishes, not a cave of study. We do not and should not aspire to educate our students to live in caves once they have left the yeshiva. We have and should have higher and more demanding standards than the rest of the Jewish community. And then he goes on to explain what he talks about in terms of the yeshiva, Torah Lishma, and then engaging in the world. But this first piece is the key piece. How is Rabbi Lam interpreting this Gemara? A homiletic interpretation that when Reb Shira Bar Yochai comes out of the cave, the spiritual level that he was on, which was so disconnected from the rest of society, it had not only disdain for the earthly, the worldly pursuits of people, it was a destructive force. But he goes back in the cave and is told by the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's not why you're here as the Talmud Chacham. And Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was arguably the greatest life, the greatest light of the greatest light of all time. He says it's not to destroy the world. And he sees a man afterwards, and he encourages his son, who didn't yet have that transformation, to realize that when people, and we'll get more into this in a little bit, when people are not living in the cave, it doesn't mean that they should be incinerated. They also have something special that they bring to the table, and we have to figure out how do we relate to them, how do we appreciate them. This presentation is similar to a maisa that the late Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, Rav Yehuda Amital, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, used to also say. He told a story about the Mittler Rebbe. The Mittler Rebbe was the son, meaning in the middle, Rav Dov Be'er. He was in between the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe of Shneur Zalman, and the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, which was his son-in-law, the Tzemach Tzedek, Rav Menachem Mendel. So Rav Amital apparently told this story many, many times, and since he passed away, it's become a very well-known story that Rav Amital used to tell as the founding yeshiva, Har Etzion Rosh Yeshiva. Apparently, the Mittler Rebbe was learning one day in his room, and he was visited by the Alter Rebbe. And the Mittler Rebbe was so engrossed, so focused in the learning, in the sugya, in the Dvar Hashem that was in front of him, he didn't notice that there was a baby crying nearby in the room. He was at his desk and the baby was in the crib and he didn't even notice. And the Alter Rebbe comes in and he soothes the baby and he taps the Mittler on the shoulder. And he says, it's very gewaldic that you're learning with so much intensity. But the intensity of your learning should not and cannot prevent you from hearing a child crying. Rav Amital used the story to explain his vision for his yeshiva, where you can have a yeshiva where guys are focused on serious Talmud Torah, but they are attuned to the cries of Jews in society who are either lost or misguided or need encouragement or education or direction. You cannot be cut off from hearing the cries of the people around you. This is Rav Amital's Maisa. This is Rabbi Lam's Drasha. What makes this even more interesting is a Gemara about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai elsewhere. But before we get to that Gemara, hold that, we'll get to it in a minute, is what was the reaction to this Drasha of Rabbi Lam? Somehow, and the koach hadibur, the power of speech, is one that can be used for incredibly constructive purposes, but it could also be somewhat dangerous, as we see in contemporary society. There was an excellent ha'ara. I didn't even read the whole article. I didn't have a chance. But last week, there was an article in The Atlantic about the challenge of the internet. I think the title of the article was, "We talk too much. We're not meant to talk to this many people. You know, how far can you talk?" So talking can be amazingly positive, but it can also be very, it can very easily be destructive. So what was the shmua? What was the rumor that went out from this speech by Dr. Lam? The rumor was that guys who are learning in other yeshivas, they're disconnected from the world. They're in a cave, which then became, Dr. Lam calls other yeshiva students cavemen. Okay. And that became a problem. It became a problem to the extent that Reb El Yosvei, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva, when later that year he addressed the Aguda Convention, he excoriated Dr. Lam. And he referenced a comment from the Rabbeinu Yonah that someone who denigrates Talmidei Chachamim is a Sonei Hashem. Even in the YU Beis HaMedrash, there was a Rosh Yeshiva, who is still one of the Rabbeim, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Reitz, who delivered a Sichas Musar, which for many years, this was in 1997, it was before I got to YU, but even till today, there's still a 20-minute Sichas Musar that takes place before Marav once a week from one of the Rosh Yeshiva or a guest Rebbe, someone who's coming to speak to the boys. This Rosh Yeshiva delivered a Sichas Musa that night, which I re-listened to because I had never heard it in the first place, but I had heard about it and snippets of it, so I actually listened to it in its entirety last week in preparation for today, in which he spoke, instead of 20 minutes, he spoke for 1 hour, dismantling the notion that somehow yeshiva students, when they're in Israel, are in a cave. He subsequently gave a Sichas Musar the following week, apologizing for this for this response. But that took place in, if this dinner was in May, that Sichas Musar was Ben Kessel, also was like right before Rosh Hashanah, I think, or right after Rosh Hashanah. You're talking October. This was like earth-shattering. This controversy, it never went away. It never really died. But what's interesting, like many controversies, is that when you go back to the source, you realize that the truth is, it wasn't such a controversy in the first place. Because first of all, Dr. Lam never called anybody cavemen. And the second is that what he's doing is explaining a Gemara which is in the context of a very interesting personality of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Because the Gemara, I think there are two really interesting ha'aras that I would make about this Gemara in light of Dr. Lam and his remarks. The first about the Gemara itself, and then about Dr. Lam's idea. This Gemara of the story of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai in the cave, it needs to be put together with another Gemara and another description of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. If you look on the next page, the Gemara in Brachos, in source number 4, Tana Rabbanan v'yosafta digonecha, we say every day in Kriya Shema, we're going to harvest our grain. Matam alomer, what does it mean we're going to go out and make a living? Lefish and Emar, Stezen Pasuk, Lo yomosh sefer ha-Torah hazem ipicha. This sefer Torah should never leave your mouth. Yochol dvarim kichsavam, does it mean that you'll never stop learning? Talmud Lomar, ve'asafta digonecha. You should gather your food. Haneg bohem, mineg derech eretz div Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael, he says, lead them with the normal derech eretz, the way of life. You know what the way of life is? People have to go out and make a living. They have to put money in a savings account. They have to have a retirement account. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, they have to have life insurance. You have to live a normal, corporeal, physical existence. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai disagreed. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Omer, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says, Efshar Adam Chorish B'Shas Charisha, second wide line. Is it possible that a person will plow at the time of plowing? Remember what he did to the people who were plowing when he got out of the cave. Is it possible, Zorea b'shazria, you'll plant at the time of planting, v'kotzer b'shaz k'tzira, and you'll harvest at the time of harvesting, v'dosh b'shaz disha, and you'll thresh at the time of threshing, v'zor b'shaz haruach, and you'll winnow at the time of winnowing. Torah matehe olea. What's going to be with Torah learning? You're going to be so busy with work. Like the Rambam says, the Rambam wrote in a letter to Ibn Timon, he says, don't bother to visit me. I know you're my official translator, but don't bother coming to Egypt to visit me. I spend a whole day taking care of people. I'm dealing with people at the Sultan's office, then I come home taking care of Jews. They don't have Medicare, they don't have Medicaid, they have, you know, I got to take care of them. What's going to be with Torah? I'm busy taking care of people all day. I'm doing work. That's Reb Shimon bar Yochai. Says Reb Shimon bar Yochai, you know what the pshat is? Elo bizman sheyisrael osim ritzono shel makom. When the Jewish people follow the Ratzon Hashem, malach tenasas hayadei achem, we don't have to go to work. Other people do the work for us. If we were at that highest level, we wouldn't have to go to work. Somebody else would do it for us. What's interesting is that the Gemara, if you go to the fourth line from the end, Amar Abaye, harbe osu kreb Shmuel v'olso b'yodam. Many people try to live like Rabbi Shmuel. They try to go to work, and they tried to make time to learn. They learned Mishnah Yomi, they learned Daf Yomi, they went to a shir, they did some Mishnah Brura, they went to a wedding, they carried a kitzah Shulchan Aruch in their pocket. They went to work, but they also tried to learn. V'olso b'yodin, it worked out for them. K'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, a lot of people tried to follow the path of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, v'lo olso b'yodin. Didn't work out for them. So Rava says, Rava, who is usually the interlocutor of Abaye, his opponent, Omali Rava l'Rabbanan, Rava said to all the rabbinical students, "B'matusim inaychu, do me a favor. B'yom inisun v'yom etishrei lo tischazu kamoi. Don't come to the yeshiva. Don't come to the shir klali. Don't come to the archikala in the months of Nisan and Tishrei. Why? Kihechi t'lo titradu b'mezonaychi kulashata. So you don't have to worry about making a living the whole year. Go make sure you work in those times, and the rest of the time you'll have more time for learning." So Reb Shimon bar Yochai is the one who is the biggest proponent of Torah only, the most extreme formulation. Was this comment of Reb Shimon bar Yochai before the cave or after the cave? I don't know. But Lamaisa, the cave episode is recorded. If the cave episode is after, it makes a lot of sense. If the cave episode is before, it's really interesting that even after having gone through the cave episode, he still believes as a matter of principle that it should be Torah only. It's just for other people, he won't incinerate them. But the idea now that Reb Shimon bar Yochai and the cave is the only way to look at the world of Torah, now is not so simple. If I only had the story of Reb Shimon bar Yochai in the cave, you know, we could talk about how to interpret it. But now we see that Reb Shimon bar Yochai's opinion was not the only opinion. It doesn't mean that it's not a valid opinion. It's not an important opinion. And for some Yechidei Skula, perhaps that's the way to go, to live in that cave. That's what Dr. Lam is describing. But now we're introduced to an alternative, to Rabbi Yishmael, who says that the goal is not Even when we're doing the right thing, the goal is not to live in the cave. It's not to be Torah only. It's to go to work and make a living, derech eretz, for most people. It's an alternative. The second interesting nuance here from this whole controversy and all the Taram is that Rabbi Lam made this point 40 years earlier. It's a very wonderful creative researcher, colleague of mine. His name is Menachem Butler. So at some point, I forget where I saw this, he posted that if you go in the Lam archives, Dr. Lam, he wrote all of his drushes out full text, and he kept them. And now they're categorized, and you can go online, and you can read them. I mean, you could buy the books, Drashot L'Dorot, which is great, or you can get them free online. So you just go to the Lam archives online. So take a look at the bottom of this page. He typed it out formally. Norman Lam, the Jewish Center, Lag BaOmer, May 7th, 1966. 31 years, right around the same time in ER, In New York City, the rest of the world, Dr. Lamb's giving a drasha in the Jewish Center about Lag BaOmer. And he's talking about Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Why do we have a celebration of Rashbi on Lag BaOmer? He gives you four reasons. And the last is, this is the day that Reb Shimon emerged from the cave. It is in reference to this fourth reason that I propose to emphasize the marvelous tale told in the Talmud concerning Reb Shimon's famous sojourn in the cave. This story, if properly understood, contains within itself a judgment on our lives in 1966 that is so incisive, so powerful, so relevant that we cannot dare to ignore. We cannot and dare not ignore it. So, what does Dr. Lamb do? He goes through the whole shtickel Torah of the Gemara, and he talks about modernity and the challenge of modernity, and that different responses have appeared in recent centuries. One has been to retreat to a cave, to burrow deeper and deeper into the recesses of the Ma'ara so that we aren't influenced by the outside, by the pernicious, secular, and anti-spiritual forces. That's one option. Another option, Lo Aleinu, he says in the Drasha, is to just take it all. Just assimilate. Just say, I surrender to the overwhelming winds of change, to the waves of secularism. If he had to choose, Dr. Lamb said, if there were only two choices, to live in the cave or to surrender to the secular world, he said he would choose the cave without a question. But he says maybe there's a third option. He's not speaking now from the perspective of yeshiva students. He's talking to congregants in the Jewish Center. Turn the page. This is the 10th page in the Drasha. Orthodox Judaism in our generation is beginning to emerge from its cave. It must never reject that cave entirely. There will and always should be some who will guard that cave and prefer to live in it. God bless them. But as Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar learned 1,800 years ago, that cannot hold true for the entire people of Israel. Maybe that's what the Gemara was saying in Brachos, that Harbe Asu, many people tried to live in the cave and it did not work out for them. To insist upon it is to wish, heaven forbid, destruction upon the Jewish people and particularly the Jewish state. If there are such, then the divine voice commands them, Chizru l'maraschem. If people who have the mentality of the Ma'ara and come out and burn everyone and everything around them, they have to go back. They should stay in the cave. Return to your cave and do not impose your wish upon the community. As a people, we must leave our self-contained caves and risk the great perils, and they are many and tragic, of attempting to live the life of Torah in the wide community, joining the rest of the world in the daily pursuits of all mankind and endeavoring to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim Barabim. So Rabbi Lamb has already, he's already gone to the cave and developed this idea long before he delivered the talk in the Grand Hyatt. So this controversy, which never went away, once we parse it a little bit, we see it's not the world's biggest controversy. Number one, because it's an age-old controversy. It's an old machlokas between Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Because Rabbi Lamb never called anybody cavemen, and because Rabbi Lamb also understood and emphasized the value of spiritual experiences which are completely, hermetically disconnected from the larger community. But what he's encouraging is a third path, the path which celebrates the Torah in the context of the greater world. So if that's a perspective on this controversy, so what's the takeaway for us? So perhaps this is actually a challenge for each one of us, rabbis, but more so even regular, precious, beloved, highly respected balabatim, men and women. Because there is a veiled charge, which in the end of the drasha is not so veiled, from Dr. Lamb. And it's expressed in a magnificent pirush on this Gemara from Rav Kook. When Rav Kook was a young man in Europe, he started writing a commentary on the Agaditas, on the story components of Shas. And he continued this even when he moved to Israel toward the end of his life. He only got through Brachos and most of Shabbos, some of Shabbos. So Rav Kook has a commentary on this story in the Gemara in Shabbos. And it's accessible to you because I Xeroxed the page for you from this book, which is a translation. We've mentioned him before because he does a lot of Rav Kook translations, Betzalel Naor. So he does a full translation of the whole section of the Agadita here. The book is called Of Societies Perfect and Imperfect. That's his own title. So Rav Kook says the pshat in this Gemara that we saw. And now let's think about it on our level, for each one of us. How are we going to grow from this maisa, right? When you go home and someone asks you, so what was the shiur about? So you can tell them, oh, it was about a juicy piece of lashon hara about Dr. Lamb. That's one takeaway from this shiur, but that's not mamash the takeaway. Rav Kook says, let's go back to the story. Remember the story? The story had an old man, Ben Ashmashos, running with two hadassim. When Rav Kook looks at every Gemara, he opens our eyes, my eyes. One of the amazing things I've been working on in the last year or two is I have a chavrusa in the neighborhood, and we learn Einaya. And it is absolutely incredible to see how Rav Kook unpacks a Gemara that I would have never pictured in a million years what he's talking about. The Gemara has a discussion about how much mustard you put on a hot dog, and Rav Kook explains that mustard represents sharpness, and how much of your Avodas Hashem is supposed to be built on Musar, and how much is, like, amazing, amazing, amazing insights. It's incredible. So what does he do with this Gemara? So we'll read the English, it's just easier. He says the following. It's Marmukam number 6. The sanctity of the Shabbos comprises two aspects. One, it sanctifies and uplifts Israel with its holiness. With the very sanctity of the day, uplifting them beyond all mundane matters and infecting them with a higher glory and sanctity. Besides this, the sanctity of the Shabbos also attracts the energy of all the weekdays with all their mundaneness and lowliness. By remembering during the week the holiness of the Shabbos, the workdays are uplifted. Parenthetically, we can add, in the morning we say, Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos. Rabban, this is where we're part of Shabbos. It's Sunday, but it's part of Shabbos. Though it be unconscious, the Israelite soul uplifts itself even during the week by virtue of the remembrance of the Shabbos. In this way, secular affairs are not as lowly as they outwardly appear. Rather, they are continually uplifted by the sanctity of Shabbos. And though they, meaning the Jewish people, us, you, each one of you, all of us, are engaged most of the time in mundane work, nevertheless, holiness is so close to their heart that the highest purpose of life is lodged deep in the heart, which is rooted in holiness. When we do whatever we're doing during the week, deep down there's a little spark of us that says, L'kavod Shabbos Kodesh. According to the sublimity of the revelation of God's closeness in the soul, which depends on the good and righteousness and other ways of God, it is possible to view temporal life and those engaged in it with contentment. We can view it with contentment, with happiness, with shalva. We can realize that there is ruchnius inside. It's possible to view temporal life and those engaged in it with contentment, with happiness, with positivity, says Rav Kook. Twilight is the passage between past and future. It connects the secular to the holy and symbolizes the influence the holy exerts upon the secular. Though based on an outer perception, the secular would appear very gross and lowly, there is within it an inner power whose holiness and superiority can be recognized only by an acute inner sense that resembles the sense of smell. Says Rav Kook, why was the old man running with a hadas, with a myrtle branch? Because what do you do with hadasim? You smell them. Kol hanishama tahalel ka, says the Gemara. Nishima, breath, smell. That's how you know you make a bracha on reach, because reach is a very difficult to discern quality. It's totally spiritual. That's why Adam Arishon and Chava, they saw the tree, they took from the tree, they listened to the nachash, they ate from the tree, but what did they not do? They did not smell the tree. Because neshama and neshima, the smell was not tarnished in the chait of Adam Rishon. Because smell is totally ruchni. So you have a person who goes to work a whole week, but bein hashmashos, they're taking something that's... It schmecks fin ruchnius. It smells, meaning deep inside, if you're really paying attention, that Jew cares about Yiddishkeit. Something from which only the soul, not the body, derives pleasure. Rav Kook is referencing in Gemara and Brachas. The effect of the holy over the secular results in practical alacrity. A person can be so excited about Yiddishkeit until even the energies of old age are aroused to alacrity in deed and action. Why is it Dafka an old man? What was the old man doing? He was running. You ever see an old man run? My grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, my mother's father, and I've spoken about him before, he was so close. So he had a stroke right before my bar mitzvah. And he was a very big person. So one of the great privileges of my life is that my parents used to send me, even by myself, when I was a teenager, I used to go to spend time with him. And we would do, you know, walking in the hallway with the walker and the cane and the four-prong cane and the tennis balls and the pool, the exercises, the whole thing. So we also used to go, so my grandparents, Aleihem HaShalom, especially when I would come by myself, it was very special. So we used to go out for dinner. Kangol cap, jacket. We would go to Sarah's Pizza for dinner. Maybe it was like 4 o'clock, 4:30. Okay, it's good. But the whole dinner schedule was around Mincha Maariv, because even though my grandfather, he was not privileged to have a Jewish education, his father was a Rav, and when they came to America, so he was a teenager, he was a big guy, and he took responsibility to work for the whole family, so he never went to, so he learned Mishnayos, that was the extent of his Torah learning, and he was a minyan addict. He was kavu. I never went anywhere where there was no minyan. That was his connection to Yiddishkeit. It was amazing. Left a tremendous impression on me. It was huge. So no, every schedule of everything was always around minyan. So I still remember, I could tell you this from this day, after he had a stroke, they had to move buildings, because in their old building in the Crystal House, there was no minyan, and he was very debilitated, so he couldn't get around very easily. So they had to sell their apartment to the Crystal House and move to the Carriage Club South, which had a minyan 24/7, 365. So he had a place. They moved to the second floor, so even on Shabbos, somebody could schlep him down to get there from the second floor. He should go. He shouldn't miss a minyan. So I still remember one time. I forget where we went for dinner, but we hit traffic on Collins on the way home, and we were late for mincha. And I still remember. He was, I don't know, to me he looked like he was 6'8". He was probably more like 6'1 or 5'9". But I still remember he gripped my hand. I thought he was going to break every bone. I didn't even know how many bones were in there. He gripped my hand, and when we got to the hallway, which is, you had to walk down the hallway to get to the shul on the right side, he started to run. The four-prong cane was flying, and he was holding onto my hand like the building was on fire, because we were potentially going to be late for mincha. And this was a man who could hardly walk because he had though you know what it's talking about. But he was so on fire about being with Tefillah B'Tzibur, with the Ribbono Shel Olam, he was running. I felt it. I'm telling you, I was like, I was afraid. I didn't know, like, either my hand was going to break or we were just going to go crashing through the door. But the cane was trailing because there was an old man who felt that this was his Yiddishkeit. This was Chias. That's why he's running. Nevertheless, the level of the holy is not lowered. The holy does not become an adjunct to the secular, but rather retains its independent level. Last paragraph. When they encountered Friday afternoon an old man, who naturally should have no longer any energy, have the speed, the energy for speed, so utterly transformed that his liveliness reflected holiness, that he was holding two twigs of myrtle to smell in honor of Shabbos, signifying the inner spiritual sense which must issue from Zachar. But why two? One for Zachar and one for Shamar. See, so says Reb Shimon Bar Yochai to his son, how the commandments are beloved by Israel. The holiness of the commandments is the soul at the center, the life energy of the wheel of all their actions, simple and lowly though they seem. Yes, maybe a person, they come as an immigrant and they work selling shmatas in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, keeping samples in the car, driving from place to place. But that's not what gave this person, who I saw as a giant in my own life, that's not what gave him chizuk. That's not what gave him chias. That's not why he ran. He didn't run to see customers. He saw customers because that's what you have to do to sell shmatas, to provide parents, siblings, children. You run for the Ribbono Shel Olam, for your neshama. Their mind was put at ease, and they no longer were troubled by eternal life being sacrificed for temporal life, having seen that even the temporal life of Israel is integrally bound to eternal life. And this bond rejuvenates and energizes the feeble and tired, making them zestful for holy service even in old age. This sublimation whereby the heaviness of old age might be converted to the agility of youth is possible only when secular deeds reach beyond to holiness. This is the relation of eternal life to secular life, which is elevated through the association. Says Rav Kook, that's the pshat of the Gemara. Therefore, their mind was put at ease. Mardik. So you know what the takeaway from this story is? The takeaway from this story is, we need to ask ourselves, when are we running? When are we running? What makes us run? And if we're not running, we got to figure out why not? For what are we living? What can we run for? What are our two hadasim? The Rambam says the Pirush HaMishnayos, we say it all the time, this Mishnah, when we get ready to say Kaddish, Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael, God wanted to do us a toiva, so he gave us tons of mitzvahs. You know why the Rambam says? He says, because different people have different shorshim of their neshama, different roots of their neshama. And you just need to really connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam on the deepest level for Chaya Olam Haba, you need one mitzvah. The challenge is that different people have different attitudes and different proclivities and different approaches to life. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a smorgasbord so that you could find that mitzvah that you're going to run for, that you're going to be addicted to, obsessed about, so connected to. And that's the question of the story of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. None of us are living in the cave, out of the cave. That's just, you know, it's nice for a drasha. And maybe it's good people who want to, you know, say Lashon Hara out on the street corner. Talk about that. But that's not the inyan. The inyan is you look at the store and you see an old man running. When are we running? All of us are going to get old one day. But there's still going to be something we could run for. Even if a person is physically debilitated, they're still running. Because the running is, it's from the ruchnius, it's from the smell. A person can smell even if they don't move. If all of their other, the physical components of a person, they may be debilitated, Rahman al-Islam, they can still smell. The neshama, the neshima. So that's what we got to think about. When we think about this maaser from this Gemara, we got to think about, okay, where am I running? When do I run? Maybe I run to work. Maybe I run to catch a plane. That's not mamish running. When am I running? Ben Hashmashos, what is important to me? Which mitzvah do I feel is mamish, that's me? And I'm going to run like, no matter how old I get, this is going to be my mitzvah. And when we think about people in our own lives who inspired us, I guarantee you, you will see them running. Maybe they're not running physically, but they were on fire for this. There are people who the only thing they worried about is, did they give enough tzedakah? Right? There are people like that. That's the thing they mamish, they obsess over that. Even when they start to lose their faculties, what do they worry about? Did they give enough tzedakah? That's what they're running for the whole life. Everything else they walk for, but for that they run. Some people it's minyan, some people it's learning, some people it's achnas archim. But Rav Kook is saying everything else is the outside. Everything else is the secular, it's the mundane. It's there, it's good, because there's an inside. So what we need to do is make sure that we have that quality. We have something, it's within all of us. That Bala Tanya writes, there's an Ava Mesuteris, there's something for us, each one of us to run for. But we got to figure out, what is it to be able to answer that question for ourselves? Why are we running with those two Adasim, with Zachar and Shamar, the Kavod Shabbos Kodesh?